Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of the HYM podcast. Been a long time since we did the last one, Jake.
Yeah, mate, we've done so much since. I know.
The last 35 minutes has been pretty jam-packed.
Yeah, I mean, I have changed my t-shirt just to...
Same.
I don't know why we bothered in the end if we're going to tell people that.
I know, but yeah. But we're here now, aren't we?
It's really professional.
You've gone back to the England shirt, though.
Yeah, what, because the Euros.
Yeah, but you've done an episode in the England shirt. Then
I'll do them all in the England shirt, mate. I don't care.
Okay, should we do that over the Euros, the episodes that we record in England?
Yeah, I don't care, mate. I'll do them all.
Well, it is coming home, isn't it? So.
Exactly.
So who have we got on today, though, mate?
So today we've got a very special guest. We've got 2018 Euro Formula champion, Formula 2 multiple race winner, an all-round top bloke. It's Felipe Drugovic. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, good. I'm all good, guys. Thank you for being here, for the opportunity, and let's talk some stuff about racing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, mate, Moore. But yeah, whereabouts are you right now? Whereabouts are you in the world?
I'm in Italy. Currently, I'm staying in Italy. Well, I live in Italy for the past 6 years, maybe, during this racing season. And then off-season, obviously, I come back to Brazil, but now I'm in Italy.
Yeah, so you didn't really think to move to Norfolk, did you?
No, not really.
Well, I wonder why.
Yes. Like I told you before, I don't know much about England, but when I went there, it wasn't too bad. Only went once to the team, but I think Italy is a little bit better.
I think you chose well there, to be honest.
I think so.
It's like Lake Garda or Norfolk. It's obvious to me, isn't it? It's Netterton all the time.
Yeah. Well, at least we can do some testing with an F4 maybe or something. No, I'm joking.
No, maybe you definitely don't do any of that. Not allowed to do any of that. You've just come back from Baku. So you're kindly taking the time to chat to us, but how was that for you? I mean, obviously the results seemed like you had a little bit of a struggle, but got a good one in the end.
Yeah, we, as FP started, for practice started, where I didn't feel well with the car already, and neither me and my teammate, Joe, we didn't feel good with the car. So we changed some things during quali and races, but the two sprint races, which didn't really work out. But then we managed to find a good compromise for the last race. At least for me, it worked, and could make my way from P11 to P4. So yeah, I think difficult weekend, but I don't think Baku was the strongest track for us in any way during the championship. So I think it's quite good to come out from there with a fourth place.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we spoke to people yesterday, but it looks so competitive this year, F2. It's like it's really going to be one of those bad sort of weekends where you don't have the pace, and it's sort of like, you know, having not scoring or not scoring and having a good sort of bad result, let's say. You know, you're going to have those weekends where you win the races, or like Monaco, we got a double podium, I think. But it's about those weekends, I think, like what you've just done, where you score some good points when you're not really that feeling that great with the car.
Yeah, I think you're just... The most important thing, I think, is just staying in the top 10, I would say, just to get that reverse grid race and get some points from there, and then get some bits of points also in the other two, but which is really difficult as well. As you know, street circuits in the mid-pack is always quite chaotic. So, yeah, I would say the most important thing is just be consistent in the top 10. But saying that, it's also been quite difficult because everyone is so competitive, and it's difficult to stay there all the time, also with all the chaos in between. So, yeah, I think nobody's been able to open up a gap in the championship.
Yeah, and obviously, you come from Monaco, where we just touched on it. I think you got a double podium. So congrats for that. And that was obviously a much better weekend overall than Baku. But both street circuits. So what was it you were struggling with in Baku, getting the tyres to switch on? I mean, obviously, it's definitely very different to Monaco, but inherently still a kind of street circuit. So what was the difference?
Well, I think the biggest difference for us was mainly straight line speed. We're losing quite a lot, but not because of engine or anything. I think was actually the two corners that we were losing most was last corner into the straight, and we were losing quite a lot out of the corners of these 90 degrees corners, which is basically every corner park is just a 90 degree. Yeah. And the car, and the car felt quite disconnected for me and Joe. We just, like, you know, when you try to push and then it's oversteer an entry and then understeer a mid corner, so it's quite difficult to be able to put, like, the corner all together and carry the speed needed. And we weren't able to push the car how we wanted. So nothing really related to tires or anything, because they're basically the same tires as at least the quality tires from Monaco. And I think we're mostly losing there. But then going into the last race, we made some changes and we got close to the top guys. I think we're not even close to being the fastest car, but still we're in the top five, I would say, which was quite good.
Yeah, I think it's quite... I mean, I've never driven Baku, but from looking, obviously, from the previous history and the results you sort of see and the carnage that normally happens there, it's one of those tracks, I think, where if you come away from the weekend sort of with a solid result, you don't necessarily have to win, but avoid all the chaos and pick up points, because it's going to be so easy to not pick up points, basically. So I think you did a very good job with that. And I think you'll hopefully look back at the end of the year and think probably that was one of the differences.
Yeah, hopefully. I think it's been a really tough start from the season to me, especially barring one thing is if you go to Baku, for example, and you think, okay, maybe this is not the best track for us, so we just try to score some points. But Bahrain was actually the track we thought, okay, we have to make some profit of this, because it was for sure the track that we knew we were going to be really quick. And then we were really quick. I was P3 in quali with a not so good lap, which is normally doesn't happen enough too if you don't have a not so good lap. And I lead free practice. So we had a really, really, really good car. And yeah, because of some things out of my control, also some mistake from my side, I just got 2 points in the first round. And then, yeah, it's difficult to take the risks to gain back these points during the season, but not, of course, not ruining another weekend. So yeah, it's been quite difficult to me, but hopefully, like you said, at the end of the season it's going to pay off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously consistency is going to be key, so hopefully, I guess they've got, because it seems from the outside it's been a bit up and down, like you say. I mean, Bahrain seemed a little bit disappointing, but Monaco seemed very promising and very, you know, rewarded a lot of points. And then obviously in Baku, pace was not there, but come away with some points. So obviously, I guess the aim of the team at the moment, and you and Joe, is to kind of iron that out and smoothen it out a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think hopefully from now on the tracks will fit better our team setup, or the tracks they are better. Obviously, looking at the races last year, Silverstone and Monza were, I think, probably the strongest tracks for you and I, Vitrosi. And hopefully it's going to be again this year. But I think every year Pirelli changes a tire, and sometimes you think you're pretty sure it's going to be good in one track, and sometimes it doesn't really fit in. But I think it might be all good to see with some ones, and hopefully we can gain these points back as well.
Yeah, we've mentioned it on other episodes of a guest, but I don't think people probably necessarily realize that Pirelli often change it every year, you know, and they don't really tell you, or maybe they don't even know, to be honest, that they've changed it, but it affects the car. And, you know, it's not as easy as just copying and pasting the setup every year. I think testing becomes very important all of a sudden. And obviously you don't get a lot of it, especially with COVID. You know, you'd only had one pre-season test, I think, and then you had one post round one test.
Yeah, 3 days and 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. But even 6 days on its own is not a lot when you think about it. But to have one pre-season, you know, it's to sort of try and learn where the changes are on the tire. The tire itself only gives you one or two laps anyway, so it's not like you get a massive amount of data to look at. It's so hard, isn't it, to sort of find where that window is.
Also, I think we got 6 days of testing, and each 3 days of testing, we get, I think, 8 set of tires, which 2 of them are the option tires, which doesn't last for nothing, and the other six they don't last that much as well. So we cannot just be it's not so useful to get 3 days with eight sets of tires. So at the end we don't drive that much. Yeah, and then you pretty much have to rely on simulator and this kind of stuff. But as you said, as Pirelli changes the tire all the time, it's pretty much a lottery when you go to the track.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it on a previous episode, but I had an obvious example of something I couldn't call upon about Pirelli changing the tire between 2019 and 2020 in F3, where we ended the year pretty well in HWA in F3, and we started the year in 2020 with only one test in the end because we had Bahrain and then COVID happened and season was delayed. And you go into Red Bull Ring and we were okay, but we were not quick enough, nowhere near. And it was only until we did those two back-to-back Silverstone races where we had the same tire for 2 weekends in a row where we actually tested something and we like, okay, that worked. And then we scored pretty much the most points. But before that, we scored nothing. And I don't think it's commonly understood how sensitive these tires are. I mean, it's understandable in a way, which you think you're watching on TV, you don't feel it. They feel really different when they, you know, sometimes you can do a lap and you think, okay, that was mega lap, and you're more than half a second off. And then you do like what you said, probably in Bahrain, you do an average lap, but the tire's working, but the balance is not great, or the driving was not great, and you're still in the top five.
Yeah.
It's
pretty easy to happen. Also for me, there was a massive example last year. I think the test we did together in Bahrain at the beginning of the year, that was F3 and F2 together. Pretty much if we used that setup in the race at the end of the year there, I think I would just be spinning like this and just doing donuts. And it doesn't make any sense because our problem was completely understeer the whole test. And then we get there with the same setup and then silver steery like crazy. And everybody's just like, okay, yeah, for sure they changed the tires even in between the season, but they don't tell anybody.
No, but like I said, I actually don't think they know that they've changed it sometimes.
Probably.
It's just how it comes out of the factory. but we won't go there. I think you touched on it a little bit earlier, but obviously the weekend format's changed quite a lot this year. I mean, just looking at it from TV, it doesn't look as entertaining, to be honest, from, let's say, a fan's point of view. But it seems like you guys have been having to be a little bit more conservative, especially in race one, to try and, you know, last two races effectively. Is that kind of how the strategy seems to be going?
Yeah, for sure. The most important thing, I think, is to score points. I would say if you take sprint races, you kind of make that as one race. If you be okay in the top 10 in one race, you kind of be okay in the second one as well. But then the feature race is a complete other thing. So, yeah, I think race one, everyone is being really careful not to touch anyone. Not like me in Baku, which I touched someone. But, I think it wasn't really, well, it was a stupid thing from my side, but not as stupid as it looks. And, I think you really have to be careful in the first one just to make sure you score points in the first and second. And then have the pace to score on the speed race.
Yeah. Do you like the format or not really?
No. The other one was for me much better, but not because of the extra format, but because they reduced the amount of race weekends. And then because of that, then we drive less tracks. We have less free practice and qualities. And we have, I think, four extra sprint races and four less feature races. So we drive actually a lot less.
Yeah, actually, it was only put to me recently that about the feature rate, you have less feature rates. I actually didn't clock it for some reason, that was obviously what was happening. But it also looks like the gaps between race weekends are so long. It's like you could, I mean, we saw a little bit with Nannini actually, like you could do F3 and F2.
Yeah. Completely crazy. But which at the end, they said it's good to cut costs, but which doesn't. I haven't seen in my budget. and then at the end you just drive them a lot less. But yeah, it is what it is. It's the same for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there was one guy who said that, you know, it was semi like a good thing that you could, you know, have time between races to sort of like talk to the engineers, talk to the team, see what you're missing out on. But actually, it depends how your season's going, I think. I mean, yeah. if you're having a good one, then you don't want the break. If you're having a bad one, then you have time to sort of think about it. But I'm not sure you really need that much time. I mean, there's only so much data you can go through. You're not testing anyway. So I'm not sure what you can do.
No, of course not. And they also limited the amount of sensors we could use in the cars. Also, even in testing, until last year, we could use tire temperature sensors. And then they limited for this year as well. Even for testing, we didn't have tire temperature sensors. So because they limited the amount of megabytes or gigs we can upload by the test, which is quite crazy. And then, they tried to make everyone be even more bunched up, but at the end, the good teams would be always there and the bad teams would be always there. So
I don't understand why they do that. Obviously, there's maybe there's two reasons why, but I still don't think it makes much sense. Is one being cost, which they always say is the reason, but I don't understand what. I mean, you know, we're talking about a championship that's 2 million or something like that. What's really going to make a difference by taking a few sensors off the car?
What's a couple of thousand euros in sensors?
No, exactly. And you ask any driver on the grid, I'm pretty sure if they said they could spend an extra $5,000 in their budget for the year to have the sensors, they would. And the other reason, like you just said, maybe is for competition, but it's how you kind of perceive the championship. I mean, DEF 2, at the end of the day, it still is a junior category. And so for that reason, I think that, you know, you go to F1 and you have all these sensors, all the information in the world you could possibly want, and they still sometimes can't make the tire work. And then they expect a team, a junior team and drivers that are learning the tire without sensors to try and understand the tire. I mean, I did 4 years of F3, and honestly, after 4 years, I still can't tell you exactly what was happening all the time. Like, you think after 4 years, I would know it inside out. I didn't. And when I mentioned earlier about when we changed something on the car between those two Silverstone races, the only reason we could do that was because we had the TPMS sensors.
Yeah.
So we learned something about the tire. But if we didn't have that, we would have had a really, I mean, we didn't have amazing year anyway, but we would have been outside the top 10. And that would have looked awful for me, you know, for example. And that's what I don't like about it. It's like you're asking junior drivers to learn and show, they're trying to paying all this money to try and show themselves to F1 teams and professional manufacturers. And you're making it look like, you know, entertainment, basically.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest point also for the new format. They wanted to have all the chaos in race one and two to make it look good. At the end, there is also a good thing about the new format. You get the feature race on the Sunday, which is quite nice. There's more audience, and then there's actually the main race. But I think that's the only good point about it, for me at least.
Yeah, I can actually agree with that. I think that makes sense, but I don't know how you would set the grid for the sprint race if you were still having two races.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe they just reverse the top 10 from qualifying or something. Makes qualifying even more important then, I guess.
Yeah.
I personally don't like it watching. So I can understand that it probably feels like that driving. How is it with the new team this year? Obviously you were with MP last year, and changed to Virtuosi, you know, the, like we joked about earlier, the sort of Norfolk heroes only do F2, don't do F4, don't do F3, any of like that. It's really focused, isn't it, on just F2. And I've spoke to Callum before. He said he really liked it. You know, it's like, it's just us against the world kind of atmosphere of like little team just doing that. Is that pretty nice as well?
Yeah, I really like the team. They're really, I'd say, family team, if I can call it. So everyone knows just each other. It's quite automatic, if I can say the team, like everyone knows what to do. And MP was kind of a mess at the beginning because they changed many people inside the team, which for sure brought a lot of performance to the team. But we could see like the team wasn't nowhere before, and then we could actually win races with them. But it was actually quite difficult to put it all together during the year. And Virtuosi is completely the other thing. They are really They really know what to do. Everyone knows how to work with the others, and it's a small team, but they have a lot of resources. They do a lot of simulations, so it's they have a lot of experience by the end. Compared to MP, you go to a track and they know, okay, you have to drive like this, you have the car which basically needs to run like this. And with MP, it was actually a new thing every time we go to the track. So we would do pre-practice with our standard setup and then see what we do from there. But actually, we chose it. They actually know how the car has to be run in each track, which is quite good.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside, it looks like because it used to be called iSport, I think, virtuosity, like 8-10 years ago, whatever it was. I think Sam Bird drove there once as well, Tom Bilham and these guys. But then since it's come back as Russian time, would have been 14, 15, something like that. I think it had one or 2 years away. Since it's come back as Russian time with Markolov, it just seems to be one of the stalwarts of F2, you know, just one of those teams that are competitive every year. And that's quite an achievement, I think, we've just talked about, especially with the tires. So
yeah,
they clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. And which is also a nice thing. I think with MP last year would have been really difficult to make this kind of jumps in between the weekend. Like if we started the weekend quite badly, it was difficult to make our way up. And this year I think it happened in Monaco and also in Monaco, I started pretty well, not so good. And then we finished a feature race with a really good result. And the car was really fast. I was basically one of the quickest cars on the track. And Baku is pretty much the same thing. So we can actually react to things quite quickly, which is quite nice.
Yeah. Obviously, you have a good teammate as well with Joe. That makes a big difference. I think that's really underestimated in F2 and F3 to have two or three guys, you know, pushing each other all the time and making the car work and the tires work, hopefully, as it should. You can learn a lot, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when, like you said, there's not much testing. So as long as you have data from your teammate to compare what you need to do, or even if it's just like, okay, I'm missing a little bit in one breaking point, it's already quite a big thing to go into quali if you have only one pre-practice.
Yeah, I guess also, I mean, you had a really good year with MP, I would say, last year. I mean, from the outside looking in, I think you really, you know, upped your stock, as we would say. I don't think before that the team was seen as that competitive. I guess you probably understood that before you went into the season last year. It was your rookie year, so it was like good to be on the grid maybe and try and, you know, get some decent results. But you won 3 races, including the last feature race, I think, or the second last feature race maybe. So what kind of made you go from, okay, I've just done that as a rookie with a maybe not seen as the best team, but I was driving well with it, to then go and switch teams?
So, sorry, I didn't catch the last part. I just cut it.
Yeah, no, it was just to say, obviously you had a good year of MP. So what made you go and kind of go from wanting to, you know, 3 race wins to then change team basically?
Yeah, I think it was the consistency issue that we had in MP. Obviously that we've decided that I was going to change teams before the last feature race win that I had. So of course, if I would have to decide later than that, then it would be a little bit more difficult to decide to change teams, because I really liked the environment in MP. It was really good for me. I really liked the people, but at the end, it was, like I told you, it was difficult to react in difficult weekends. Every time if we arrived in one weekend and everything was going fine and it was pretty much sorted out for the whole weekend, we knew what we had to do. But if we went to free practice and we were like P15 or something, then we knew it was going to be difficult to make anything out of the weekend. And we've seen the consistency of Virtuosi, and they wanted to, seeing my results last year, they wanted to do something for this year. And yeah, I think it was pretty straightforward, the decision.
Yeah, I guess so. Especially like you said, before that feature race, I guess that makes sense. Was that why Callum was bigging you up in the press conference of that race? Because he was signing there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, for sure. Thanks for Callum if he's watching this.
No, but, he won't be watching this.
Yeah, I'll send it to him by WhatsApp actually.
Ask him to come on.
Yeah. And but yeah, he knew I was going to be trolls anyway. But yeah, it was nice from his side to say that.
Yeah, he's a nice bloke, isn't he? Isn't he, Callum?
Yeah.
Does he still sort of come over to the team or sort of stay in touch with everyone?
I think he would if there wasn't this bubbles thing with the COVID. But in testing that he was allowed to, he came and just said hello to everybody. But of course, it's quite busy doing interviews and that kind of stuff as a third driver in F1. So yeah, I think if he had some more time and there was no bubbles, he would come even more.
Yeah, and so let's obviously, we covered a lot about F2 this year. So I want to kind of ask you how you got into racing. Obviously, you're from Brazil, I guess you started there with karting.
Yeah. So my family always likes racing. My three uncles, they used to race, obviously, in a kind of amateur level, but it's just for fun. And my youngest uncle, he actually won some championships in truck racing, you know.
Truck racing.
Those normal, well, I don't know if there is in Europe, I think Formula Truck or something like that, what it's called.
Yeah, there's definitely something, isn't there?
Yeah. And in Brazil, it was quite big, actually. So he won 2 years of that, and it was actually the year before I was born. But yeah, they never forced me to do anything. Obviously, I grew up inside a family that really loves the sport. And when I was 8 years old, I asked if I could try a go-kart, and they said, obviously, yes. And I tried it, and obviously I really liked it. So that's how it started.
Oh, you didn't fancy doing the trucks?
No, of course not. Something a little bit quicker. It's also because the family business is spare parts for trucks and buses. So that's obviously the way it's gone for racing, which was quite easy to get sponsors and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the motorsport community, I've never been to Brazil, but the motorsport community seems pretty, you know, for a non-European, because obviously motorsport is quite, seen from the outside, it's quite European heavy, as in terms of the championships. But Brazil seems one of those countries away from Europe that's very, like, motivated with motorsport, and there's a lot of, you know, good drivers like yourself that come through. Is the competition quite high out there?
Yeah, there is a good level, of course, but Europe is for sure a lot higher level than that. I think people in Brazil, they really like racing, and they've actually been kind of a, how can I say, orphan of motorsport after Senna died. And
yeah.
So then they are actually like waiting for someone to actually be there when races in F1. And so that's why we get a lot of, many people following the sport, also not saying good things about us if we don't win or if we do bad things on the track. But yeah, it's they actually really wanting someone to go up there. But as I said, the level is quite good. Also, the categories, we have stock car in Brazil, which is close to a V8 supercar category, something like that. And the level is really high. Also, engineering levels. Many people from Europe that go work there. And yeah, it's pretty good there.
Yeah, I mean, I was teammates obviously last year with Enzo. And Pietro was often in the truck for the weekend as well. And your following is Brazilians. It's nuts.
Yeah,
it's I can't understand it, actually. Not why, but how there is so much. You know, how they know about you.
Yeah, it's actually quite crazy. My followers on Instagram and everything else just blew up after the first race in Austria last year, and I think I went from less than 10,000, like 7,000, to I don't know how much I am now, 60, almost 70,000. So it's completely nuts. And yeah, I didn't know there was so much people following F2 and something like that, because just how much I grew and social, and also in Brazil, people wanted me to go to F1 and stuff like that. So it's quite nice to see that.
I think there's a kind of new new age of fan for F1 that's kind of helping out the likes of F2 and the F3 guys now as well. I think Drive to Survive on Netflix has helped quite a lot. There's a more younger generation, it seems like, now that like watch the sport. And I think because of that, they liked, you know, they hear about F2, it's Formula One, it's Formula, the next thing is Formula Two. And most of you guys now in F2, you have quite a decent following, you know, like more, sometimes more than indie drivers or Formula E drivers. And I think, I guess a lot of it is coming from the F1.
Yeah. I think they're doing a really good job. I still think it's not as leveled up as the MotoGP stuff. I think MotoGP is actually the number one for these things. Like if you see the race weekend, they actually treat MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3 a lot, I would say not perfectly, but like a lot better than Formula 2, Formula 3.
It's very equal. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, for sure, you know a lot more than me, but it's I think they're on this path, like trying to make people that races in F2 and F3 quite big as well. Of course, in Moto2 and Moto3, they earn money with this, and not all of them, some. And in Formula 2, Formula 3, we actually have to pay a lot. So that's, I think, the biggest difference, and that's what they have to work on. But obviously, having more following, we can find more sponsors and stuff like that.
I think what MotoGP does so well, and Moto3 and Moto2, is that the fact that Moto3 and those 250s, the Moto3 bikes, all the teams on those bikes, they're the highest level of that bike in the world. That championship is the pinnacle of that bike. Moto2 is the same. It's the pinnacle of that bike. And I think what, you know, maybe F1 could take in F2 and F3 is that you guys are, I know we said about like the tire temperature sensors, you guys are at the pinnacle of those cars in the world. So like, you know, maybe the level needs to be, you know, the respect, not respect, but it needs to be sort of like, right, these guys are at the absolute top of these cars in the world. Forget about going up a step to F1, but just look at that step there, that we're at the top of these cars and pushing them to the limit. Because that's what MotoGP is. You go to a MotoGP weekend and you're going to watch the best small bike racing, the best middleweight bike racing, and the best big bike racing. And in essence, that's what F1 is. F1's the best, the fastest big cars in the world, the fastest sort of middleweight cars, and the fastest junior cars.
I would love to see, we touched on it again in the previous episode, everyone would have watched, obviously, everyone would have watched it.
Everybody
would have watched. That I would like to see a world where in the next 10 years, maybe sort of watching it as a, you know, maybe coming the later phase of my career and sort of seeing these junior drivers in F3 and F2 sort of get the benefit of what F1 is doing with Liberty and sort of making the fan base bigger. I mean, the cost is obviously massive to do F2 and F3. And it's a lot more than, I guess, what Moto2 and Moto3 will be.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll get a situation where people will be getting paid like you sometimes get in Moto2 and Moto3. But I'd like to see like the teams become more like their own, like stand out on their own. Like maybe the marketing or the advertising, the way it works is better. The Virtuosi's, Hitecs, Pramers, Carlins can all have big sponsors on the car, and they can make the cost a bit cheaper to the guys. It makes it more accessible to more people to do the championships. And I would like to see that a lot more, because at the moment it's obviously like if you're I was privileged enough to be able to do F3, but if you're able to, you know, if you don't have the money, you can't do it, basically. And there will always be an element of that. But I'd like to see it come down. I don't know if you think the same, Felipe.
Yeah, for sure. As you said, it would be really nice to see the teams being treated as you said, like the pinnacle of each category. And also, as it's pretty obvious to see if you watch a MotoGP and Moto3 race, you see the sponsors in each team. It's like really big sponsors for what you maybe, I think, coming from motorsport or from Formula 2, Formula 3, you think those teams are small, but they actually quite a lot bigger than actually Formula 2 or Formula 3 are, but not because they want, just because they let them develop themselves. Mm-hmm. The sponsors is quite mad into motors.
Yeah, well, we had Jayan Deruvela on, and we talked about Red Bull, obviously, and Red Bull have got, they've got Tech 3, Tech 3, and they've got the Red Bull KTM IO squad. And they both run KTMs, and Red Bull this year have got their full proper Red Bull sponsorship on both bikes. So if you look at them from watching the TV, you can't tell the difference between the four riders because they're all Red Bull branded. And I think, it's like from an outside perspective, you never see a Carlin t-shirt. You never see you know, you never see a Trident t-shirt, whatever team, it doesn't matter, but you never see brands of the teams, and it would bring so much more value to the teams and the championship and the drivers, especially because at the end of the day, the drivers are what people also don't realize about bikes or cars is that at the end of the day, it's them who are bringing the budget.
Yeah.
And it's them who's putting the most in as well. You know, you like, I'm training probably as much as the guys in World Superbikes, MotoGP. You guys are training as much as Formula One drivers to be fit and be at your level. So it's almost that we're taking the big risks here, but not sort of getting the rewards of the top. But again, it's a journey, isn't it? And if we can make the junior series, like I think MotoGP has done so well, make those on more of a level with the top, it's going to be a lot better for the whole sport as a general.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we see with F2 and F3 is like the drivers that, obviously the cars that have Red Bull or whatever sponsorship over it, because of the driver is a Red Bull Junior, let's say. But in Moto2 and Moto3, they are Red Bull sponsored teams.
Yeah.
And I would just love to see that, you know, in whatever, how many years time that, because I don't understand why not. Why do F2 and F3 teams not have sponsors?
No. No,
because
exactly.
Especially now, the I would imagine the viewership that especially F2 has is only growing all the time. I feel like it should be seen as its own thing rather than just a junior category where the teams can actually go out and source big sponsorship deals that maybe bring the cost down by half or something.
But also the interesting thing is in MotoGP, you look at the MotoGP teams, for example, and a few Moto2. Yamaha is sponsored by Monster as a factory, as a title. Suzuki sponsored by Monster. Red Bull's KTM. Aprilia is sponsored by Sky, I think, still. Mission Winnow sponsor Ducati. They're big, big names. And then Moto2 is the same. Red Bull won the KTM. Estrella Galicia still have input into teams and riders. You know, these are huge companies.
I'd like to think in the next few years we might start to see a move to that. But yeah, that's definitely not where it is right now.
No.
But yeah, something I want to touch on. Obviously, I think your F2 wins, mate, are your standout in your career so far, to be honest, at least for your perception and your value or stock or whatever. But obviously, you won the championship with Euro Formula in 2018, and you pretty much dominated it. So obviously, that would have been a very fun year because it's nice when you're winning all the time. But yeah, how was that, I guess, to win your first car championship?
Yeah, it was really, really nice for me. Obviously, coming from F4 the year before, I had a really good year, had the most wins, but I couldn't really get the championship. I think it was Vips, Armstrong and me between 7 points at the end of the season, like 200 and something points, but in between 7 points, all of us. And yeah, I was quite frustrated not to get it with so many more wins. But yeah, also coming from that, and was quite rewarding to get the championship there. Obviously, I would really love to go to FIF3 on that year, but I think we chose to go that path basically to save some money for later, and which was quite a lot cheaper for me. And yeah, I think it was maybe the right decision as well, because I could drive as well quite a lot. I learned the tires, the Michelin tires, which were, I think I would say better to learn than the Hankooks. And yeah, I think it was really rewarding year for me, that, and then moving on to FIF3 the year later also, because I did that also because if I did FIF3, the 2019 would change everything again because of the new category F3. And so yeah, I think it was a good decision, and for sure bringing one title for my curriculum is always pretty good.
Yeah. Do you think you would have, because obviously European Formula 3, as we know it, the DTM Formula 3, finished, I think, at the end of 2018. Do you think if that stayed, you would have gone on to do that rather than GP3 F3?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was for sure really, I think it was, how can I put it? wasn't more competitive because also the teams in GP3 was really, really good. But I think for the same, mainly the same price, we were driving a lot more and the teams were a lot more developed because it was not under the F1 F1 environment, but it was under the DTM. So the teams could develop quite a lot on those cars. And it was quite a, like you said, like it was Moto 3, basically. Everyone was on the top end of those cars.
Yeah.
And it was quite a nice category for me, at least. And but yeah, obviously doing your Formula was, I think, was better for me at that stage.
Yeah, I think when we had both of those championships in European Formula 3 and GP3 as it was, it depended where you wanted to go with your career, I think, a lot of the time. I mean, if you were a rookie or if you were still going for F1, a lot of people would go, a European F3, then GP3 before going to GP2 as it was. But like for me, for example, I did 1 year of GP3 and then went to almost sideways to European Formula 3 with the DTM. Yeah. And my motivation for doing that was because I realized I didn't have the money to go to F1. And it was all about going to DTM, basically, with Mercedes and HWA at the time. So I think that championship, it was a little bit more like all-rounded for other series, let's say. But for sure, the Pirelli world of F3 was all about, you know, getting to F1 and sort of trying to make a difference in front of the F1 team bosses, which obviously you went on to do with Carlin, right?
Yeah, well, I you mean in F3 in 2019?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I tried to make a difference there, but it was really bad here. The whole team, I was the best of the team of the three drivers, and I was P14, I think, which was terrible year. Worst year of my career, pretty much. So, yeah, I didn't have any pace in the car. We struggled from the beginning of the season. I think also because the cars were new, so everybody was actually developing during the whole year. So if you start a step back, then you just keep the whole way the step back. So, yeah, it was really, really hard for us. And yeah, at least I knew I could do something good on the track still. So then I went on to F2, I think mainly because it wasn't our plan. Our plan was to drive for a good team in F3 another year. Mm-hmm. But then we had this opportunity talking to MP, and I went on to do the test in Abu Dhabi at the end of 2019. And it was actually very good. So then they wanted me to sign. And yeah, that was it pretty much. So for sure was best move of my career, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at that point as well, unless and maybe you were talking to them, but unless it was the opportunity to go to Prema in F3, it was probably not, you know, it was probably better to go to F2, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It was much better. There was a chance, but as everybody knows, I think everyone has a little chance to get into Prema. So then there's like probably 15 drivers to get into that. And then, yeah, I think at the end was much better to go to MP and also work with my engineer in MP, was actually Armstrong's engineer in F3.
Yeah, he moved over, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was really nice here. Of course, he was bringing a lot of experience and he teach me a lot. So yeah, it was for sure the best move.
The thing I remember most about you in 2019, racing you, because we never really raced each other properly, and it's not a good memory for you. It was, I think it was Budapest race, I want to say two, but it might have been one, where I think you had a puncture.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, because you were fighting for the podium and and you had a puncture, and then I actually got the podium.
Yeah, fuck. It was, I think it was, we were like fighting for the whole championship, fighting for at least getting some points in, and I actually managed to get some points in the first one. And I went to the second one, I think it was P3, and I was defending like crazy for the whole race to get the podium, and then I got a puncture. So yeah, it was not nice to remember that, but yeah, who cares? Yeah. The whole year was really bad.
That was cruel, to be honest. I think you saw, because you were teammates with Logan, weren't you?
Yeah.
I think you saw with him going to Prema the year after last year.
Yeah.
The difference in the car. I mean, Carlin, obviously, that. Very good in F2, so I don't understand why F3 was off, but clearly it was for someone like Logan to change team and just go like that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, also for me, we didn't really understand. Me and Logan were really pissed off how we could be so slow. And for sure, there was something really significant that that was missing there, because we tried so many things during the year. We just tested during the most races, everything we were changing, and yeah, nothing really worked out. And I think even now they didn't manage to put it all together. Of course, the team in F2 is completely different to F3 in Carlin, and for sure they are much more focused in F2. But we don't understand it even now.
No. Well, so probably, like you said, I think it's better to forget about it. Probably. Did you do Macau that year at the end?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
with Carlin.
Yeah, it was actually the only race the car was actually good, and then I completely messed up.
What happened?
Yeah, I was. I think it was for me first time in a street circuit. Wasn't so nice being in Macau. I was never been to a street circuit, and then just going directly to Macau with those cars was a big shock a little bit, but still wasn't too bad. I was in the first half of the grid, I think it was B13 or 14 in quali, but I was managing to pass some people. I was into the top 10 in the first race, or in the, what is it called, quali race or something.
Yeah,
like.
Quali race, exactly.
Yeah. And then I locked up into turn one, went straight into the barrier, and that's it. And then started from last, and started from last in a feature race. But then, yeah, it was quite. It's just safety car the whole time.
Yeah, Logan. I wasn't happy with him that weekend.
He went straight into you into turn one.
No,
yeah.
Well, he. I actually like to have him on there, because I think me and him didn't like each other for a few months after that. Basically, and it wasn't until we were on the podium quite a lot last year together, I think, when he was at Prema, that we kind of cleared the air enough to start talking with each other. Mm-hmm. But I think basically he braked really late in the quali race into Lisboa, the first corner effectively, and I saw him coming in my mirror, and I didn't leave him the space, but I saw him coming to the point where he's going to crash into me if I don't move. So I moved to the left, gave him the gap, and sure enough, he went straight on and crashed into Miney.
Yeah,
pull him into the wall, and then Miney hit the wall in such a way that he'd come back, and I had nowhere to go, and it took my left side of my car off and blocked the whole track. Everyone that was doing well that weekend, Dan Ticto, who was your teammate obviously that week, he was gone. Me, Armstrong, apart from Vips actually, and Logan got through, and then got the podium, and then in race two we're all starting at the back, and I remember I said. I can't remember who I said it to. I just said he needs to apologise, and he didn't. And so for that reason, I just didn't speak to him for a few months. but yeah, yes, I didn't like him for a few months after that.
Yeah, now you remembered me why the quali race wasn't so good as well, because I got stuck in the traffic. I had to park the car reverse. And then
you got stuck in it.
Yeah.
It's happened. It's so annoying, you know, to fly. I mean, in the end, it happens to F1 guys all the time, obviously, but you fly 12, 13 hours and you qualify. I had a great weekend to that point, and you go into quali race. And that's the frustrating thing. It's just a quali race. It's a race that's actually not important, really. And you just want to finish it. And then that happens, the track gets blocked for you, and it's still horrible. It's such a horrible feeling. How cool is Macau, though?
Yeah, it's amazing. For me, it was actually like quite a big shock going out from the pits and going into the pit sector. I was like, do I really have to go through this like a fifth gear flat out?
Yeah.
And I was actually quite scared at the beginning. Not scared, but like in shock, because first time for a street circuit. But then, just after five laps, you're okay with it and you're just trying to push. But obviously, I had Tiktum as a teammate, which I was not far away off. I was actually quite close to him. Actually, Logan was actually better than him at the end. You see, like, he had a lot of experience, obviously, there, and he was getting really close to barriers all the time, which I wasn't. I think after that was a good experience. And moving on to Monaco this year, was second time I drove in a street circuit. It was actually really good for me. Also one of the things which I wanted to have done FIA F3 was that, because in FIA F3 I think there was two or three street circuits, and in your format there wasn't any. So it was also a good thing to have done that.
Yeah, exactly. We had Norris Ring and Poe as well normally.
Yeah, that's a good track as well.
Yeah, you drove Pro Euro Formula or?
No.
No, of course you didn't. No, I think maybe the year after you was they went there with Euro Formula.
Yeah,
I think they did. Yeah, Pro is a great circuit actually. I mean, it's you can't overtake. It's but the race is pretty boring. You just have to keep it out of the barrier. Yeah. But the track is really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I remember the same thing. But when I went to Macau for the first time, I'd actually done Po before, but it was my second time. But I remember going and doing my first run in FP1 in Macau, and I came into the pits. I must have told this story on another episode. And my engineer was speaking to me. I just remember, but no, I just didn't hear a thing. Because I was just sat there, just like really, really wide eyed, like what just happened kind of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't take anything in for that. I was just like, what the hell was that?
And
he was speaking to me, and I just might as well have not bothered. He just might as well have sent me back out again to learn the track.
Yeah. It's completely chaos in the mid sector. It's just, I mean, the level of concentration is quite big. And also for me, the year I did Macau was, I mean, I was completely destroyed mentally, to be fair, going into the last race. I was like, yeah, who cares? I'm just going to finish this year. And then, and also even crashing the quali race, going to last race, I was starting last. I think I finished last as well because it was just safety car. And I was like, each corner, I couldn't really soak in everything. Like I was just trying to keep it on track and I couldn't drive actually. I was like, this is really weird. And then going to 2020, I really managed to get a good rhythm mentally. And I think that helped a lot for me.
Yeah, I hope it comes back on the calendar once. Hopefully COVID doesn't stop it this year.
Yeah,
it'd be great. I'd actually love to go back, even in a GT car. Actually, I'd love to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I suppose sort of towards the end of this, I kind of want to ask you sort of what your, I mean, it's obvious what your immediate future is because you'd focus on F2, try and win the championship, I guess, and see what comes afterwards. But I'm imagining yours beyond that. Your goal is obviously F1, right?
Yeah, for sure. For now, it's only F1 that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And obviously, there's still a Grand Prix, isn't there, in Brazil?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's my biggest, well, not biggest dream, but one of my biggest dreams is to drive an F1 car in front of all the Brazilian people. It might be really cool.
Yeah. Did you ever go to the race?
I've been once in 2011 because I won a karting championship in which was the prize was to watch the race in Nevada.
Yeah, I've never been to Brazil actually. Since I was teammates with Enzo, I keep getting questions from Brazilian his fans basically to say, can I come to Brazil? So even me, I still get it. I'm not even Brazilian, and I still get some of your fans, Enzo's fans, messaging me.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what that race weekend is like, especially if you're Brazilian. I mean, I remember seeing the scenes when was it Felipe first retired?
Yeah.
And that was these, you know, he was crying. That's I think the Brazilian fans are some of the most crazy in the world in a good way.
Passionate, aren't they?
Passionate. That's the word. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said earlier, it's been a while since the Brazilian racing driver, especially successful in F1.
Yeah.
Who was the last Brazilian driver in F1? Nasser?
Felipe Nasser.
Yeah, it was.
Nasser, not Massa.
No, yeah.
There's a lot of Felipe's, isn't there, man?
N-A-S-R.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully I can be the third one.
is there any more Felipe Brazilian racing drivers you need to know about? Can't think of any.
Not in the minute.
No. I wonder if it's the most famous name in Brazil by any chance.
Hopefully no one sees this if I'm actually missing someone important. But no, I don't think so.
It's like John in English.
There's no John Smith racing drivers, though, is there?
Yeah, I don't think there's a John Smith racing driver.
Surtees, maybe.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, actually, yeah. There is a John Surtees, yeah. Obviously. That's pretty poor from us, that is, Alex, to be honest. Especially me. Actually, I just remembered about the, obviously, the Brazilian stock cars as well.
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to do that?
No. Well, not that I don't want to do that, but never focused on doing that. But it's really nice category. It's actually I got surprised by the last year. They really upped the game there, and there's so many people from Europe working there, and the level is really high. Obviously, we have so many XF1 drivers, and the grid is really, really strong. You could see, I think, Da Costa, he went on to doing another race there. He managed to win a race, obviously the reverse grid one. Obviously, the format, I think, is not the best thing there, because you get two races and you have to do one pit stop in one race only. So we actually focus only in one race from the other. But the level is really, really high there, and for sure he was struggling to be at the top 10 at the beginning, and ended up with a win, which is quite nice to show also the level from Europe there. But yeah, I think the category is really nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't actually know the format. I assumed he'd won like a feature race or a main race, Antonio. But it was the reverse grid, you said.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the weirdest format you're gonna ever hear about. Neither I know properly the format, but it's, they do the race, the actual race, the first one, which is qualifying grid, and then they get the checkered flag. The safety car goes into the track, and they reverse the top 10, and then the next lap they restart. They don't stop, and they need to do like one pit stop in one of the races, I think. So either you put a lot of fuel for the first one and you focus on the second, or the opposite, or something like that.
So it's like really focused on the tactics then?
Yeah, like focus on letting more people win, to be fair. So yeah, some people just focus on race two, some people just focus on race one. Before it was actually better, it was just like an actual feature race. But for this year, they're doing this, which is not so nice. But they have also the million reais, which is the it's like the coin we use in Brazil, the money we use in Brazil. But you get, if you win that, you get a million reais, which is about 180,000 euros, and that's only one feature race, and that's mainly the races everybody's from Europe is going to do there, which is quite nice. Actually, it's the same thing, but just a feature race, which is quite nice.
Yeah. I'd quite like to have a go, maybe. Maybe if some of your fans are listening that owns a team, or
that know someone.
Yeah. You should. I think it's quite, it's not easy, but there's quite a possibility to European drivers to drive there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because Antonio obviously likes it, so.
I bet it'd be one of those things, like, you go over and do, and you'd just be, like, blown away by it. It'd be like, whoa, this is awesome.
Well, I think I'd think that about the country as well, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. South America is just as a whole, yeah, it was the best place I've visited.
I've never been. Still,
it's it, or, the or thing is, been? Is I raced in Argentina.
Oh, cool.
So we raced in San Juan, which is the new track in the north, like north west of the country. So yeah. Flew to Buenos Aires and then over there, and I think because it's just like the continent is just like so such a contrast to Europe, so it was something just completely new. So no, it was definitely one of those places I want to go back to. But yeah.
I think we've covered that most of it, mate, to be honest.
You know that's one of the quickest hours that I've had it.
I didn't really realize it was been an hour until I just looked at the time.
Me and Jake do. We do messages throughout just to keep an eye on the time, and I think I've sent him only one saying 20 minutes.
Yeah. Cool. Nice. And you, Jake, what are you up to this year?
Well, I'm busy. I seem like, obviously, I'm not in the car as much, but I'm very busy. I'm just I'm doing a lot of, well, my reserve role with the FE team, Mercedes and Venturi. So I'm doing loads of simulator. Made it a bit difficult the past month with travel restrictions with Germany. But yeah, doing all of that all the time, traveling to the races. I do work at Mercedes F1 and another F1 team as well. So I'm basically just a flat-out simulator driver these days. But no, I mean, it's thinking about, obviously, the future, hopefully. You know, I'm in a good place with a good company. and team with Mercedes. So let's see, hopefully bring something in the near future.
Yeah, cool. But, yeah. Good. Wish you all the luck.
Thank you very much.
We'll wrap it up there, boys. So Felipe, massive thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it. Yeah. And if anybody wants to go follow Felipe on Instagram or anything, it's just at Felipe Drugovich. So go give him a follow and go wish him all the support for the rest of the year. But no, from me and Jake, we'll see you all in the next one. Thanks for tuning in, as always. Leave a like, leave a comment, leave a rating. Tell your mum.
Your dog, your aunt too.
And just anybody who will listen, really. But
we'll take anything.
We'll take anyone. But yeah. Thanks for listening again, guys, and we'll see you in the next one. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.